Here we go. We're back with another weekly helping of Sheep Farm. I hope everyone's in good health and keeping nice and warm in global climate boiling change. This is a quick intro, actually. Well, it might not be that quick because me and Chris like yapping. Into episode 154. On Thursday, which will be Thursday 30th of November, we had the pleasure of welcoming back fellow researcher, podcaster truth, or whatever you want to call it, author Mark Devlin. We recorded a two-hour show, and what we're going to do is release the full podcast as an audio version, as usual on Saturday. So release an hour for non-members, 2 hours for members. But then I'm going to actually put, we did a presentation behind it, and I'm going to put some more detail in it as well, which might take me a while. But we're actually going to release the whole lot, probably in two parts, part one and part two, as a presentation more than just an audio. So it gives you a bit more detail as to what we're talking about, because we went into quite a lot of detail, and sometimes it's nice to have the information behind the screen in it, Chris.
Yeah, why not?
So it will go out as usual on Saturday. You'll be getting this now, so it'll be on there on Saturday as a Sheep Farm podcast. Be available on Podomatic for the first hour, although I might update that and put the full 2 hours on afterwards. It'll also go onto YouTube, Rumble, and Odyssey. Hopefully it'll stay on YouTube. Who knows? But most of these stuff now are on Rumble and Odyssey anyway. Podomatic, send them out to Spotify, Amazon, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Apple. The ones that are released also, it'll be released, on Mark Devlin's channel. So whether Mark decides to do them as 2 one-hour episodes or a full 2 hours straight away, that's up to him. But I think when we do these shows with Mark, I think they're worthwhile releasing to everybody because he's got some interesting information. Please subscribe to the website for notifications, because I get people saying, I want notified about you, this, that, and other. But, well, you would be if you subscribe to the website. It don't cost anything, it's just your email address, even though we're collecting IPs, etc.
And you can join for £2. You know, you never mentioned that.
Jacko said, we and Jacko were talking, and we were talking, and says, IPs, I said, the only ones I know are black IPs. Sheep Farm Shop is still open. We didn't have a Black Friday. I don't believe in any of that business. No. Maybe have an half chat Friday. Can you say that now?
Yeah. Brown Friday.
Yeah, Caramac Friday.
Off yellow Friday.
Yeah. I remember one of my mates once, we were back at this house. He said, I took this girl out the day. I said, all right, what she were like? Blonde? No. She were an half chat. And I went, you what? And he said, oh, no, I didn't mean out by that. I said, I don't say you did. It just came out because you were drunk.
I don't think half chat's a bad terminology. I won't take offence to that.
I'm sure some people do, though.
Mm. Yeah, white middle class people.
Yeah, white middle class people. Yeah. Stop oil people. Yeah. I did another Matrix. We're on number 25 now. I keep thinking that's the last one, then doing another one because something else has annoyed me. But yeah, there were a couple of videos on there that did annoy me. They're also uploaded to Rumble and Odyssey as well, automatically, actually, sometimes. So I don't leave them on YouTube. I leave them on there for about a week and then take them down. So all of the Matrix videos are on Rumble and Odyssey. And one of the videos on there that got me goat were them nurses dancing. I don't know why that.
Well, that got me goat at the time, facts. we were all the ridiculous nonsense.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. You've been busy, haven't you, with gaping gobs the last few weeks?
Yeah, coming up to Christmas, flat out. Don't have time to do anything. Too much chef work on, so I'm burning it at both ends. I'm actually goosed today. I was packing boxes till 9 o'clock last night, 9, 10 o'clock. But yeah, I'm not moaning, it's good. If I can make a bit of cash out of my weird sculptures, it makes me very happy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's good, it's nice. It's what I've always wanted to do, so it's great. And also, doing drawings for Sheep Farm, that's got me drawing again. I didn't used to draw as much as I like to.
Thanks.
We need a reason.
Your mum told me to look after you.
Yeah, and now I'm looking after you.
You're right.
Need a reason to drop. Someone actually, a guy called Stephen in Thailand. Hello, Stephen, if you're listening. He's actually asked me to do him a painting. I'm going to pay him to do him a painting, which is fantastic. Mm. Like a full-on canvas. I said I could do a digital one if you want, you know, it'd be cheaper. But he said, no, he wants a full canvas. So thanks right. for that.
You do realise now you're actually a commercial scumbag, don't you?
Sculptor.
You can't make money.
You're not allowed to make money out of anything.
The only way you can tell the truth is by whipping yourself with nettles and thorns and living on the street. That's it. They're the only people. Yeah. Pardon?
You like that whipping with nettles one? You get it from
I do. Crab Claws said that. You got to whip yourself with nettles and apologise.
Crawl on your hands and knees.
Crawl on your hands and knees. Yeah.
He's a funny phenomenon.
It is.
I heard Jason Lingram actually say that they were on about you can't put a price on truth, and he said he reckoned it were a psyop in itself just to say that.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. You know. Well, anyway,
we've all got to feed ourselves, haven't we?
We have got to feed ourselves, but also, Chris, I'm going to stop talking about. I know I take the piss, but I'm trying to think of ways to not be reactionary, Dom.
I'm actually going to say I call you reactionary dog, because if someone says something, you just immediately, yeah. Well, all right, I'll delete your account and give you all your money back then. And they're like, well, I didn't mean that. I'm just, people are entitled to opinion. Like I said before, I think I'm a bit thicker skin to it.
I don't think it's opinion, Chris.
I think I've been in the service industry my whole life. So.
An opinion's one thing, right? That's not an issue, that. I've no issue with it, opinion. That's not opinion, that. Being totally ridiculous isn't an opinion.
Yeah, but
I might as well have a conversation with a pink-haired stop oil nutter.
No, but
that's the type of nutter that you don't want to have a conversation with.
Which don't reply.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, because I've been in service industry my whole life. Yeah, but in a different way, fighter as a chef, directly, you know, if there's a complaint, they walk straight in and tell you. And that's why chefs react as well. That's why they've got an anger. I never do. Just put it into perspective. How many meals you served today? 300.
What do you do?
How many have complained? One. So, you know, well, let's put it in perspective then. Yeah. You know, I've never tampered with anyone's food. I'd never do that.
No.
Once you've crossed that road.
Yeah, you might as well go. might as well stop. You might as well work at Kentucky.
Well, even, I'm sure. Well,
they're
sure.
Pre-tampered.
Well, it's just, I don't know.
Or pre-tampered.
I've never actually really witnessed anyone do that either, actually, tamper with someone's food. I'd be horrified if I saw someone do that.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. Yeah.
Because it's just, there's a line you don't cross, isn't there?
Oh, 100%. 100%. That's not good. Mm. Couple of things. The pub, Dunny's Pub.
Yeah.
I keep mentioning it. You've got the link now. It's only taken you 4 weeks to get it. I'm glad you're all looking after me.
Pub in Honley, near the event that we're doing. It's called the Crafty Kettle. He refers to it as Crafty, so I forgot it was called the Crafty Kettle.
So you've been giving people duff information for 4 weeks?
No, I said Crafties. I think last week, actually, I said Thursdays, which is a pub in Cambridge. Because I didn't have it in front of me when you asked me.
Somebody's emailed today, right, and said, hang on a minute.
Let me just give this address out. Crafty Kettle.
Just one sec. Crafty Pub. So these poor people here, right, driving up in the motorhome, apparently, and they're looking for the Crafty Pub. Can't find it, Chris. It doesn't exist.
That's 100% nice, because when I spoke to Rick, he goes, oh, send him up to Crafty's. And I didn't know it was called Crafty Kettle. I've been
is
in
there a car park there?
There is a car park there, yeah.
Can they park a motorhome in there?
It's a small village. There'll be somewhere to park around there, though.
Yeah.
Even near where Jonathan's venue is.
My advice is don't park on yellow lines. Other than that, dump it anywhere.
Anyway, I apologise for my crap information, but it's called the Crafty Kettle. It's 11A Westgate, Honley. It says Home Firth, but it's not in Home Firth, is it? But that's the address. HD96AA. But they've got a website anyway.
Yeah, I'll put the link to the website.
Got the link there,
at the bottom.
Crafty Kettle in Honley. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people like saying Home Firth, because it's some wine stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nobody knows Honley. Honley's another a smaller village.
I mean, to be fair, Home Firth's just round the corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Well, it isn't just round corner, is it? It's probably a good couple of miles away.
Right.
It's not just round corner.
Is it not? I don't know. I can't remember. No, it's so long since.
It's not just round corner. Yeah.
Yeah, it should be good.
Yeah.
Rick said he's going to put a sheep farm beer on in the pub. And he told me to bring some bottle openers and he'll sell them on the bar. So I'll make a few anyway. I've got some in the shed, but not dozens. But I'll make a dozen. So
I'd like to thank everybody for ordering your vitamin C. Although, I'd like to hear some comments on. I've had some decent comments back already about what they feel like when they've been taking it. But a few questions about that I've had.
What kind of comments you got? Just out of interest.
Well, all right. Then some people have been asking questions about: is it from China? Is it from? Yeah. Is it organic? Is it quality vitamin C? So obviously, I'm probably the worst person to ask for.
How did you react to that?
Oh, well, I reacted very calmly. No problem at all with that. However, I do. I researched being ill for quite a while. I did research vitamin C in depth from the late 2000s up to the present day, really, so about 14 years or whatever. So I've got quite a lot of information. I'm not saying I'm an expert in a lot in anything, but I have taken quite a lot of it as well.
I would. I don't like to say anything nice about you, but I would actually say you are pretty much an expert in vitamin C. Possibly. The fact that you've started making your own because you take it on a daily basis.
And what I would say is the amount of effort that I've put in to look for the stuff, and actually it surprised me because going back to the China thing, I don't think people realise that some ridiculous figure like 95% of all supplements originate from China.
Bloody evil Chinese.
Yeah, I know. So regards to vitamin C, it's a similar sort of number for vitamin C. In fact, it's higher. I think it's about 99%. And there is one company that most of it's a derivative of corn, right? So some corn is grown in Scotland and then they produce the vitamin C or ascorbic acid from it in Europe, but exported to take it to Europe. It's a massive agri company called DSM who make it. And they've also got a factory in China. So when I were talking to the guy from DSM, I was saying, look, I don't want that Chinese nonsense. This was about 10 years ago. I want British stuff. I don't want Chinese, yada, 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 yada. He said, well, I don't understand why the difference is because it's the same stuff. No, it isn't. And I'm having a sort of a semi-argument with him. And he says, I'll prove it. I'll send you the certification of both of them. We own both factories, and I'll send you the certification of the one in, I think it's Austria or Germany, or it might be even been the Netherlands, and the one in China. And they were both more, when I say more or less exactly the same, some pages were different, like page 10 were page 12 on another one, and et cetera. Mm. But the certification was exactly the same because it was saying when it's processed, it's squeezed out of the corn, if you like, and it's just ascorbic acid we take out. We don't take anything else out. And we get rid of all the contaminants, what's in on the plant. So it's not GMO. It's not got gluten in it. It's halal. And all these certifications that were in there that I didn't even expect are all there.
Right.
And they're both exactly the same.
Right.
So
then it's a matter of if you just put fillers in it, then, I suppose.
Well, no, that's up to the person then from a filler point of view. I get the raw material, that the people who manufacture then can put fillers in.
So that's what I mean is, depending on the quality you get, would be on the fillers and stuff you put in it.
Exactly, yeah. Some people,
that's what you've always told me when I...
Well, that's in capsules, say, or a tablet, yeah. As far as powder goes, some people put more bicarb in sodium ascorbate, so it lessens the ascorbic acid. But the quality stuff, the one that's in Scotland, when I last priced it up, it was 7 times more expensive per kilo than the stuff from China.
That just because it sounds better?
Yeah. And he sent me samples of both, and I honestly couldn't tell the difference. I was really disappointed because in my head, I'd built this quality stuff up to be this amazing 10 times better.
It's a weird world like that, though. We were on about this because I wear Kangol hats a lot. My mate Linda works for Kangol.
Is that to cover that them 3 strands up so they don't blow away?
No, I've worn Kangol hats before. I had 3 strands. I had about 12. I had about 12 when I started wearing. In fact, I had a full head of
strands.
Locks. Yeah, full head of strands. Did I tell you about? I said this on here before when Lou once had my hat on and she pulled her hair out from front of my head. I mean, what the fuck are you doing? They're like goldust.
Lightens teeth them,
but she sent me a hat and it was a made in England version. You know, because obviously they used to make them in Yorkshire. Actually, it's all those rappers that wore Kangol hats in the 90s. They were actually from I think they're from Batley, right? A factory in Batley,
Central World Batley.
Yeah, I always remember Matt Butler, his mum had one on in '90s. He's like, what are you doing wearing a Kangol hat? She's like, they're on the dirt road. But to get a made in Britain one is like 100 quid compared to like 30, 40 quid for a normal, 50 quid, whatever, for a normal one.
Yeah.
Doc Martens do the same.
Yeah.
So they're all sourced in China, made in China or wherever. They do a made in England one. Because, I mean, the irony of it, right, that if you're a far-right extremist like we all are,
yeah,
you want a pair of DMs, which is like their trademark.
And a shill.
They're all made in China.
Far-right extremist shill.
So they brought out a made in England version.
Yeah.
Like twice the price. Mad, isn't it? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying everything made in China is great, but not everything made in Britain's great either.
Well, not everything made in China is shite either.
No. That's the lesson I learned, to be honest with you, is that, I found it quite surprising, but anyway, so, there we go. So if you want any more information on it, email me at info@elfmonger.co.uk or info@sheepfarm.co.uk. Either one of them will work. Likewise with Chris's Gaping Gobs, if you want to email him on there.
Why are you trying to sell me Gaping Gobs? Because I'm slogged off because it's Christmas and you just want to destroy me.
I just want you to lose those three strands. So we were chatting with Mark yesterday. Well, 2 hours could have probably stayed on. We were going to stay on, but you guys had to go pick nippers up, didn't you?
Yeah.
We discussed Paul Van Dyke, smiley faces, lifetime actors.
Just to mention on that fact, because we mentioned a guy on there, William Ramsay. Matt mentioned, and I've told you, I've been watching a lot of his stuff.
Yeah.
And he's got a podcast, and he's written a book about the smiley face killers that Matt keeps bringing up.
Yeah.
And I've never heard of this guy. I've mentioned it in the show, so I'll mention it briefly. But he's done some brilliant stuff. He's got a good podcast. And he was saying the other day, his YouTube channel just come back out of nowhere. It's been off air for like two years. So he's got a load of stuff on YouTube. William Ramsay's name is. William Ramsay Investigates. Really good stuff. I really like his stuff. I might buy his book. His Smiley Face Killers one. Which ties into what we've been talking about. Go on, sorry.
He's got a couple of YouTube channels, hasn't he?
Yeah.
By the looks of it.
One of them, because I've been listening to all, I've been going back through his stuff as you do. You know, we're like,
yeah.
Slightly obsessive, don't you? Me and Michelle quite a lot making me sculptures.
I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but we do. All those nut jobs, I'm sure everyone listens to this. They've all got that little tweak of obsessiveness, I think. You know what I mean? So I find someone, like if I find a book or a music, or whatever, like I did growing up, I'll just go through everything they've ever done.
Yeah.
And then move on. But I really like his stuff, William Ramsay.
Yeah, it'd be interesting chat talk. So I think Mark said he was going to interview him, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he did, to do with the smiley face thing.
You were on your list to do as well, weren't you?
Well, yeah, I'm not one who reaches out to anyone, but I said the other day, one of the guys I would reach out to would be him, because I like his... and he's got a book out as well, which is always interesting to talk about, isn't it?
We actually had some interesting comments on that last Matrix one, didn't we? Mike Eden.
Mike Eden commented on it.
I really, there's a few people, right, who, you know, when we talk about, say, Nurse Gladys, for argument's sake, and I respect that he's changed his mind on the Divock and that, but Dr. Mike Eden has jumped in the, over the other side of the fence, like a bit like James Dellenpole, over the other side of the fence with both feet.
Mm.
And I find that brave. Very that is very brave, if you ask me. Because I mean, we've been talking about this stuff for a long time, and to do that with a bit like Norman Fenton as well. To do that do you know what? It is brave, but it's not brave, because when you go through this process, as people who are listening know, your friends don't talk to you. They don't talk to you the same, do they? Let's face it. Mm. They don't. Whether we like to say that or not, they don't. And you lose friends, you lose people in your life who you've known for years. And that alone's brave. But I mean, when you've studied and become a doctor or a professor at that level.
You've got a lot to lose. Not just.
Yes. Not just financially.
Not just financially, but a lot to lose in the fact
status-wise.
Well, even internally for yourself, because you've spent your life training to get to that position, and then you find out it's all, a lot of it's nonsense.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like I listen
that's
to...
That's hard enough to take when you haven't done that.
I listen to Steve Kirsch, and I like his stuff, but he hadn't jumped over the fence to the level Mike Eden has, because he talks about it all just being a satanic...
political thing or
everything.
Whatever.
Yeah, well, he talks about things being satanic and evil, and it was all a... You've got to remember...
Steve Kirsch does?
No, sorry, Mike Eden does.
Right.
He's gone right over the fence.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Steve Kirsch is still hovering. He thinks the whole COVID thing's a sham and all the jabs were a sham, but still talks about the cut and still thinks maybe some of it was a mistake. Whereas we knew from day one, for example, that it was an orchestrated psychological operation to cull the population.
Control the population. Whatever
God
you
knows
want to call
where. Everything. Yeah. Some people make a load of money. Some people get their eugenics. Bonus.
Different layers, different levels, isn't
so
there?
So many different levels.
The street level, if you like, is fear. The business level is let's make as much money and much time in as short a space of time as we can, whether it's on the stock market or whatever, working for big pharmaceutical companies or being a politician and getting backhanders. And then on another level, there's the people like, say, I'll use Susan Mickey, who's an ideologist, probably don't care about the money, although she gets it, and she gets plum jobs at Wilder, or Van Tampon, or people like that. Then there's another level above that that are basically dealing the cards out and moving the chess pieces, that are placing the dollar bet, trading places style, and seeing what happens.
Oh, I just want to destroy humanity, full stop. And one thing I thought of today was, it's quite obvious, but the base, the increase in deaths on a five-year average, that five-year average is nearly up.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, what happens then? What happens next?
I was just thinking about it. Well, what happens then?
Yeah.
Then, no, nothing's changed over the last 5 years.
What happens in another 2 years?
Maybe that's where their goal is, to get to that without it all being revealed. Mm. And then it's all, it's literally reset, isn't it?
Yes.
The five-year average, nothing's happened in the last 5 years. What do you mean, excess what? What are you talking about? Would it be that hard to cover up the past? No, of course it wouldn't.
Well, it's been done for generations, hasn't it? Generation after generation of psyops covering up.
The five-year average will soon go.
Yeah.
Then we're in fucking trouble, aren't we?
Well, we're not, because we didn't get tapioca'd.
Then
there's
been
tap dancing around, and he's still seeing people now falling off. They're still coming up with excuses. I sent you an email just about an hour ago about... what was that email I sent you? Why are so many young people suffering heart attacks? They're still sending these stories out like it's just normal.
And and they're saying, I read that article and there's a graph there. Graphs are fantastic, aren't they, if you want to manipulate numbers or whatever. Mm. And they've made it look like a gradual rise from 2014.
Yeah, I read there's a football commentator. You probably won't know him, Chris. Obviously, you don't watch football.
Oh, I'm very up on my football commentator.
Yeah, yeah.
What's his name?
It was Chris Kamara.
Oh, yeah, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Cammy, he's called.
Chris Cam.
He's about a year ago. He came, really bubbly chap. He's similar sort of looking nostrils to you. Really nice. You know, one of them guys. He seemed just a nice guy. Mm. Last year. He came out, he had to retire from doing his football reporting. 65-year-old Sky Sports. He's got apraxia, which affects his speech, balance, dexterity, and strength. Basically, it's a neurological...
He's F-U-C-K, isn't it?
Well, I would say, I think so, yeah. But he, you know, this guy was... He were a life, you know. When I say he was his energy, he was life and soul. You could tell all he did was laugh.
Mm.
Yeah, just seemed a nice guy.
Mm.
And a year, 2 years after having a tap, you know, look what's happened to him.
He's had a grenade thrown into
his existence. We're not just talking about one type of illness here. I would listen. Somebody told me the other day. He's got an iron imbalance, but they've looked at his diet and he ain't ingesting enough iron to cause a problem. But he's got he ain't getting rid of this iron out of his blood. Now they're saying it's a liver problem. So they don't really know what it is. And all these people familiar. Are tapped. Exactly. All these people are tapped. These are, we're talking now 3 years on, several taps on. It's not even a 3-dart finish now. It's a 9-dart finish. These people are in it, aren't they? You know what I mean? What else is there that's going to come out in another 4, 5, 6 years? And that people say, oh, this illness, it's always been around. Well, no, actually, it hadn't been around. Well, just like them defibrillators didn't used to be around when we were kids either.
They were not strapped to walls outside pubs. And
No, like a bloody chewing gum machine or a...
Like I said, that 5 years nearly up. And that article you sent me about young people having heart attacks, it literally said, and I wrote this down actually, top cardiologists have said, fears that the COVID jib jabs may have fueled the increase are way off the mark,
obviously.
So who's this top who are these top cardiologists? There's a little gang of them apparently just wondering.
No, they're at top. We're top cat. Yeah. And Officer Dibble.
But that story, that horrible story, comes from the fact, and they basically just, well, it's a fluff piece just saying it's nothing to do with the jib jab, and they're saying there's an increase in cardiac problems with young people 25 upwards, but it really hits the market. They've got a graph, obviously. It's the market 35 to 45, I think. And it's really high. But they're blaming it on people getting fatter, drinking more, smoking more, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. It's bollocks.
Well, when you've got...
When you've got a situation like that, throw that one thing that's changed in the last 10 years in.
Yeah. Like, exactly. That one thing. I mean, even if you don't want to speak about the technology that's just been turned on.
No, just
throw that one thing in.
As a very basic science experiment.
Experimental as well.
Yeah, it is. What thing has changed in the last 10 years? And that's it.
Yeah.
Like the ADHD, et cetera, whatever, children's problems. These problems have risen. They never asked the question, why have these problems arisen?
So
why is it now 1 in 3 instead of 1 in 40? And there's one thing that's changed. The jibby jab's gone up for children, as we've talked about before.
Yeah. And what we're going to say, and you threw me... But if nobody can see this through the, I'll use the media as a prime example. So you've got Mariana Spring, they're spending probably millions of pounds chasing people around, people like us, for argument's sake, or Richard D. Hall and people like that, for talking out about this stuff, right? They're not going to report this stuff. All they're going to do is turn the guns on the people that are reporting it. That's all they're going to do because that's all they can do. And proper journalists, I saw O'Brien the other day being interviewed. It were on a thumbnail on YouTube.
That was a proper journalist.
Proper journalist, O'Brien. I saw him on there saying that, and his answer to it is, the Tories have ruined this country. How the Tories have ruined this country. Mm. And that was the title of whatever interview we were doing. I didn't listen to it because I can't do with him. But... and that comes back to that. He's selling that Labour will improve it. Things can only get better. Let's roll him out and...
Let's get Labour in, slag them off and say Tories need to come back, blah, 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 5 years later, et cetera.
That's the height of their journalism.
Yeah.
They're not reporting on this or the excess deaths or that's left to people like Andrew Bridgham where there's nobody in Parliament listening to him.
Mm. He's in Parliament, in, I think. Is it
today? We're today.
Today. Was it today?
Yeah. Don't know what went on there. Anyway, that's me rant over.
Don't want a rant.
No, it wasn't a rant. But okay, we'll leave it there. I hope you enjoy the conversation we had with Mark. We did. I think we're gonna be doing another one with Lance and Andy and Mark as well in the new year, aren't we? Mm. Looking back at 2023.
Yeah, I'm going to have to buy his. I don't really read any fiction anymore. I say in this, but.
You have to buy the first one, won't you?
Yeah. Oh, I might listen to it on audio, actually. I don't listen to audiobooks, but I can listen to it in my shed. But I read fiction when I go on holiday.
Right.
Usually a Kurt Vonnegut book.
So do I.
Yeah. But maybe I'll buy one for my holiday.
Yep. Okay, then, everybody. Oh, I'll tell you what I did that yesterday.
Another
I found thing. The Hitler. Podcast we did because I hadn't labelled them up at that point, right. As in what we talked about and stuff. And I'm going to dig out the Branson one as well. I'm going to edit them out and find out where we put them.
Yeah, just put them on YouTube as shorts.
Put them out on them two as shorts. That's what we're going to do.
You need a build-up, though. Can't just put the funny bit.
Oh, no, no, no. We'll just put the funny bit on. Yeah.
Yeah.
When I listened to it, I was laughing. I still started laughing. All right, then, everybody. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you soon.
Enjoy the chat
we have with Mark.
And I've got a bottle of Pinot Malbec here. Never asked.
And Chris is going to enjoy his night with his bottle, hugging his bottle of Pinot Malbec.
Sleeping and rocking himself to sleep with it.
Yeah, yeah. Playing video games, you know.
Might put a dummy end on it.
Yeah. All right, we'll see you soon.
Bye.
All right, everybody. Welcome back. We're on the Sheep Farm Podcast. We're actually recording on Thursday, the 30th, last day of November. It's gone quite quick, November. And with me and Chris today, it's good because it's during the day, Chris hasn't got his normal bottle of witch piss open, so he'll be drinking a cup of tea and a bottle of water, no doubt. He's going healthy for a few hours. But we've got our friend Mark Devlin back with us. Afternoon, Mark.
Hey, what's up, guys? Always good Mark. To be with you.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm trying to think last time I saw you was probably at that event back in...
February? That one?
No, that was before that. Afterwards, the one over by the sea, I came over, I think it was March.
St. Anne's. Which one that was?
St. Anne's.
St. Anne's. New Horizons.
Yeah, and then we recorded those Second Summer of Love.
That's right.
They seem to have gone down quite well, actually. I was quite surprised how well. I thought we'd get a bit more kickback on those, but I think people are starting to realise that everything's some kind of operation.
Yeah, well, it's not going to be the case that everything in the world has been a psyop and we've been lied to and deceived about everything in our lives, except the acid house and rave scene. They left that one alone. The planners be like, well, I think we've ticked every box there. We got the world of politics locked down, medicine, science, academia. Oh, shit! We forgot to go after the ravers.
That period of time when all teenagers were off the tits, that had nothing to do with us.
It's totally organic, totally grassroots. It just grew up by itself, you know, the way these movements do, as we know.
Yeah, well, I used to do a lot of bodybuilding. I still do a lot of weight training. And I think that area, a lot of my friends were taking illegal substances to get bigger. And I think a lot of that was about some sort of social control. Because, and also an experiment to see how far humans can push themselves taking certain drugs.
Mm. It's got to be, isn't it?
Well, it has to be because it's inserted by the same people who are running this shit show.
When you think the starters of all that movement was Schwarzenegger and Stallone.
Yes.
And they're the first versions of those people you've seen. Now the bodies are erect, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you think of Schwarzenegger, as we know his background, his dad was in SS, I think it was, etc. But he was taking steroids pretty early on, in the 70s, late 60s, 70s. And where was he getting all this stuff from? Mm. You know, you're talking of drugs that hadn't been around that long, and they're getting these new experiments, a bit similar to the LSD type of approach. I would hazard a guess, if you dug into the background, some of these drugs were coming from the same sort of labs and same sort of exercises that they were running. And then he becomes a film star and he can't even talk properly. How does that work?
Neither of them.
I've got a photograph of Schwarzenegger from the late 60s, and he's just won a bodybuilding competition, and he's being presented with the award by Jimmy Savile.
Get out of it.
Have you seen that picture?
No, I've never seen it.
No.
Right. Does it surprise you?
No.
He had his greasy little hands everywhere, didn't he? I know. Savile.
Why would it even be a surprise at this
it
stage?
It's not a surprise. No, it can't be a surprise.
Yeah.
But so they're pushing this superhuman figure, and then he becomes governor of California, where he's locking people down for taking drugs.
Mm. Yeah.
And he's
three
never.
Strikes you're out, wasn't it?
Three strikes you're out, yeah. Yeah. He's never openly admitted that he took steroids.
Married to a Kennedy.
Married to a Kennedy, to the Kennedy family.
Why would he not be?
Yeah, well, I mean, obviously, Robert Kennedy's now. He's. Obviously, he was anti jib jab. Now he's pro Israel. Etc. Just to divide everybody again.
Can't trust a single damn one of them, can you?
You can't trust any of them. You can't trust any of them. None of them are an open book. That's the problem. And Robert Kennedy was a prime example. He was in and out of drug rehabilitation centres, which, as all the hallmarks, I did some digging around on the sort of places he were at. There were hundreds of different places where they were running MK Ultra and that. That he was in the place where they were doing these type of experiments. I just think a lot of these people have been altered, and you can't trust any of them.
Yeah. I'm actually in mourning today, guys. The sad news of Henry Kissinger passing on, you know, it's a very sad day. He was a lovely man.
He did so much in his life.
And, I bet his life review was a real party.
Well, I'm going to have to get counselling after this. post-traumatic stress disorder.
The ultimate Sith Lord.
George Soros must be shitting himself because he's the last of that generation. Oh, and Baron Jacob Rothschild as well. Let's not forget.
Mr. Burns, exactly.
But the rest of them have all gone. You know, the Queen, Prince Philip, Brzezinski, George Bush Sr., Kissinger now. So it's been a real clear out. The Grim Reaper's been very busy.
Maybe he's on a shuttle train to the other side of Antarctica. Who knows?
He's only 100. He's got his whole life ahead of him.
Yeah, he's got his whole life ahead of him. But I mean, how many people, I mean, forget the victims of people like Kissinger, but if you look at the how many people he's sort of coerced or forced or used or utilized into these positions of power. I mean, Klaus Schwab's one of them. He's the next generation behind Kissinger, who he taught at Harvard. There was that Maurice Strong, who was, they're all Rockefeller men, all of these people, who then are Rothschild men, if you like. Obviously, you can't say anything like that, otherwise it's some sort of anti-Semitic far-right nutter.
So it seems.
But you've been doing quite a bit of travelling recently, haven't you?
I have, and I never thought that would be the case. There was a point in 2020 where I was convinced that I was never going to leave British shores again, and I'm sure many of us felt that way. So then a window of opportunity presented itself towards the start of this year when Australia had opened its borders to the non-Britneyed. And America followed on the 11th of May, which was the day before my birthday. So it was like a present. I just saw the opportunity to get to the States as well. Actually, what happened was I put together my Australia mini speaking tour towards the start of the year. And I thought I'd better do it now because none of us know what's around the corner. It's an unexpected window. Let's take advantage of it. And right after I put together the Australia tour, paid for by my MI5, overlords, of course. Didn't have to fund it myself or anything like that.
Did Sir Henry Kissinger ring you personally?
No, but the director of Tavistock, of course, phoned me up and my handler got in touch and we put the tour together, you know. So I didn't have to do anything. No fundraising. I didn't have to pay for anything myself, you know, a private jet, naturally. And then straight after that, I got the call from Karen B., who's the organizer of Flatoberfest. And she said, we're doing the conference in Las Vegas this year. Do you want to come over and speak? And I was like, well, I'm not an expert on the cosmology of the place that we live. And she said, well, don't worry because there's other subjects that get discussed as well. It's just a great crowd for you to come and present your information to. So I did put together a talk for that event, which was loosely based on clues and revelation of the method, predictive programming pertaining to the true cosmology of the place that we live. And so I went out to Las Vegas and that was a really great event. I was just there for the weekend. Amazing talks. Dave Murphy, allegedly Dave, blew the audience away with his information. Jason Lindgren of Crow and Jason was great as well.
Yeah, Jason's a good guy.
Shout out to Mark Sargent, shout out to Jaron, all the other speakers. And then about a week or so after that, I embarked on my Australia tour. And that was very fulfilling, very worthwhile. It was pretty knackering. I mean, people thought it was a holiday. People were saying, oh, Mark's gone out to sun himself on a couple of beaches. I did go to a couple of beaches and had a swim in the ocean, but I think I bloody earned it because I worked really hard. I did four.
How dare you?
We're not allowed to have fun, are we? We've got to live in cardboard boxes on the street. We've got to not eat.
whip herself with nettles every day. Yeah,
exactly. Otherwise, you're not a true, you know, researcher in this game. But yeah, the Australia thing went very well. I got a bit knackered and jet-lagged when I got back, and there was a huge backlog to work my way through. But I'm really glad that I did it, because who knows if that opportunity is going to be there for much longer. Who knows what next year is going to look like. So I just took the bull by the horns and thought, let's get this done. So, yeah.
Well, never mind, because Richard Branson's managed to fly a jet with cooking oil, apparently.
I saw that, yeah.
Of course he has.
Yeah. Just using cooking oil with the chemtrails now.
Yeah.
Is that where it's coming out back of those planes? It's chips frying.
Yeah, chip fat. I saw the video, actually, that you put up in. I run my wife said, I want to watch that. So we ended up watching you on video. Because my wife's into all
the
stuff.
Sydney gig?
The Sydney gig, yeah.
Yeah.
Well filmed, weren't it, that? And it seemed to be well received.
Well, it was. I think that was the best of the four gigs in terms of how I presented the information. When I got to Perth, which was the last leg, I was feeling a bit tired. And, you know, I don't think that presentation was delivered quite as professionally as the Sydney. So that was definitely the one to put out there.
Yeah, it should have gone for a bit longer, Mark. Then they could have really had a go at you saying you were there on a jolly.
Well, exactly. You know, they catch a picture of you on a beach and it's like, he's a shill.
Yeah, yeah. 100%.
He's conned people out of all that money so he can go on a jolly. That's what they say. Well, they say lots of things, don't they?
Lots of people do, for some reason. It's a strange one. But, I mean, you've got a new book out. How's that being received as well, Mike?
Yeah, so that's going really well. Here it is, The Gift and the Curse. This is a truth fiction novel. So it's the follow-up to The Cause and the Cure, which I put out in 2019. And I really enjoyed the process of writing fiction, because you can get away with a lot. You can say anything you want. You can put words into the characters' mouths. And you don't have to justify it. You can say, well, it's just fiction. Come on, man, you know, relax. It's just what this guy said in the book, you know. But in reality, you are communicating truthful messages to people under the guise of fiction. So I do enjoy writing fiction more than the nonfiction I've found. And also, you can get a great story across for virtually nothing. You know, it costs you nothing to write a book. Obviously, to self-publish it, there are costs involved. But, you know, don't worry, my MI5 handlers pay for that. But in terms of actually putting the thing together, it's not like making a film. If you want to make a film, you've got to get a camera crew and a cast and everything.
We've got one of them. We've got our MI6 guys give us full production team.
Oh, well, that's cool.
XBBC, yeah.
Yeah. You're in their studios right now?
Right now.
Exactly. So, I really enjoyed putting that book together, and now I'm just promoting it. And I've done a soundtrack to it. I think my novels are probably the only ones in the world that come with a movie-style soundtrack. So it's audio and dialogue from 2001, which is when the story is set, interspersed with the music of those times. Mm-hmm. And when you compare the music that was around in 2001 with the stuff we've got now, you realize just how far everything's gone down the shitter. Mm-hmm. So the first soundtrack that I did was set in the early 90s, and the music then was far superior to 2001. But 2001 music is of masterpiece standard compared to the garbage that Gen Z are having fed to them now.
I've not read your fiction one, Mark. I'm going to have to get that and read it. And I usually treat myself to a fiction book on order.
Right.
Other than that, I've read your other musical truths. But
I've narrated an audiobook to it as well. So I did an audiobook to The Cause and the Cure, and I'm in the middle of doing an audiobook for this one as well, because a lot of people seem to like audiobooks. I like them myself, because I don't have time to sit down and turn the pages of a book, but it's good to have one of these things on while you're driving or working or whatever.
I listen to them in my shed when I'm making my sculptures. That's a good place to, because I'm just solidly in there for 3 or 4 hours at a time. So maybe I'll give the audio one a go, actually.
Sure. Bottle of red, an audio book. Yeah, can't exactly. Go wrong.
Just to get out of listening. Just
a normal day.
But just to stop you from listening to podcasts all the time, which is what I generally listen to in there. It's nice to listen to a novel. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the podcast can get a bit doomy. It depends which podcast you listen to. But I've certainly found that if you OD on podcasts of, you know, truth conspiracy type material, it can really bring you down if you don't balance it out with something positive.
I listen to stuff about cryptids and stuff, just to throw something in there. Or something just, I liked your one you did with about the film Metropolis. That was a good one.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was a good conversation.
That was really interesting, that, yeah. That, I mean, that film is just, it's always baffled me, that film. Came out so long ago. Such a massive budget. I mean, and the effects in it were amazing. And like you were saying in that podcast, people still talking about it now. Queen used it. I mean, I think C-3PO from Star Wars is literally based on that robot. It never ends, does it? How much influence that film had.
It was transhumanism in plain sight in a movie 100 years ago.
Mental.
And it was predicting the future, and here we are. That cityscape that you see in Metropolis is the cities that we have now, or at least the ones they want to try and introduce. It's
literally New York, isn't it? It looks like that's what it reminded me of. But did he say it was 2026, that? It was supposed to...
Yeah, well Carl, the host of the podcast, told me that. I didn't realize.
I didn't.
But apparently it was set in 2026 because it was filmed in 1926, so it's 100 years into the future, and here we bloody are.
Mental. And I emailed you because one thing that stuck out at me, when something went wrong, they flooded where all the workers were, didn't they?
And that's right.
I just thought, 2026, a weather flood control. In a city with some kind of global climate warming bullshit. Yeah. I mean, that's perfectly feasible at this moment in time.
Well, you know Soylent Green, that movie from 1973?
Yeah, shit me up that when I was a kid.
Yeah, we always talk about that.
Well, that was set in 2022. That was the timeline for it.
Right.
And it was talking about... global climate warming change having created this disaster. There was famine and poverty, and people were living in squalor in New York. And they'd started making this synthetic food stuff because all the real food had gone. And you come to realize at the end of the movie that it's human bodies that they're making into this stuff and feeding it to people without their knowledge. So that was 2022. So we've come through that. But very interesting that all these movies are set around this time and they were made so long ago into the past.
I think in Soylent Green, if I'm right as well, the old guy who he knows, who he's friends with, didn't he get himself euthanized?
That's right. Yeah, there's this option in society in this movie where things are so dreadful and living conditions are so bad that people are offered the opportunity to euthanize themselves, and they go in these pods voluntarily. And they get fed these visions of blissful utopia.
That's right.
And they just kind of drift away. And then they use their bodies as food for the survivors.
That'll never take off. I think it's already taken off in Canada.
We talked about it in the last one, Dom.
Yeah, MPs pushing it over here.
Pushing it over here.
No. Ironically, one of the MPs at Frank Field, he's been ill with Big C for a number of years. And he's pushing euthanasia, but doesn't seem to have taken it himself. He's still around.
Right.
They never do, do they?
For us.
Yeah. What's that stuff you've spoken about in your shows? Is it HEC 293?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That human aborted fetus cells, yeah.
Right. So that's going into foods.
It's into food.
Diet products, isn't it, man?
Yeah, jib jabs.
Don't they say that it triggers something in your brain to make things taste sweeter? Is that the right one?
That's right. Well, that's a different one. That's still aborted fetus cells, but they use the taste receptors from the tongues of aborted fetus cells. And they would experiment. That's called Synomics, and it was bought out by a huge Swiss agri company, and they're putting them in crisps and all sorts of stuff to enhance the sweetness of food.
I used to occasionally treat myself.
Gone live, isn't it?
It is, 100%. Yeah.
And if you look at the, it's a good one actually, Mark, to stop people with, because you can say, you know, they can say, oh, you just talk about it. You say, just Google HEC 293, and it comes up and it says, even on the wiki page, I think it said from legally killed fetus cells. I think it says.
So these fetus cells have to be alive, right? So the fetus has to be alive before, so they're brought out alive. Then killed, then the bits are taken out like quick fit.
Well, if they're legally killed, it's fine, you know.
Yeah. They emphasize the legally killed.
How much different from euthanasia is that?
Well,
yeah.
And that is Soylent Green because they're feeding as humans.
Yeah,
but no. I think, didn't it have a caveat factor where it says, but it was from one done in the 70s and this is just a Frankie. So it's basically
it's even worse because the cell is self-replicating. So
it's Frankenstein, zombie cell.
The cells that self-replicate, they've growth modified them to a point where they self-replicate. And that is basically cancer, isn't it? It's a self-replicating cell. It's an immortal cell.
And have you noticed there's a brand in the supermarkets of this like vegan meat alternative stuff that you see in the fridges? And it's called Heck. Heck is the brand name. Have you seen that stuff?
Yeah. They make sausages and burgers, don't they?
It's merchandised alongside Wicked Kitchen stuff. Mm. So if this is vegan food and it's aimed at people who don't want to be contributing towards the suffering that's involved in the meat industry, why are they giving it names like Wicked Kitchen? And why is this brand called Heck? I wouldn't go anywhere near that stuff.
No. Well, I mean, a lot of the foods, I think it was Kraft. So they put it in Cadbury's chocolate, et cetera, all these things were derivatives in there. And they've hidden it away now, as they do with the ingredients, because what they have is they have manufacturing ingredients, production ingredients, but they don't. So let's just say you grow something in a field and it's sprayed with glyphosate. That's not classed as the production ingredients. So they miss all that crap that's on it out. And likewise with things like Egg 293 and all the other stuff that they're putting in, because there's several different bodily cells that they utilise in foods, which, again, that has to be part of some organised eugenics operation.
I think Bill Gates owns Beyond Meat. Is it Beyond Meat? I think is that the Bill Gates one?
He
owns
he does. Is that the Impossible Burger? Is that him?
The Beyond Meat, yeah.
They use immortal cells in those burgers. Yeah. That's what they use.
And also, Heck is a minced oath way of saying hell. So people say heck when they don't want to say hell, but it means hell. You've got a brand of food called hell. What could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, and wicked.
Yeah.
Wicked hell. Yes.
I was always suspicious even of, if you know the, when I remember all this, because I'm a chef, when all this started happening, you had to make that, it's literally called Satan. You know, what's it made out of, Dom? Do you know? It's made out of patty. I mean, I really didn't like enjoy doing it, if I'm honest, because it's just made out of powders and it's like chemistry.
S-E-I-T-E-N or something.
Yeah, it's pronounced Satan, but it's, I actually looked at it and it said it when, well, whether this is true or not, but I think according to Wiki, it's an old Japanese recipe, but I've been a chef my whole life. Never, ever came on my radar until, 5-6 years ago, I suppose. And then everyone's making seitan. And it's what they make the fake chicken out of, basically.
It's not like they don't offer us the odd clue.
Spitting them is rubber chicken. There you go.
But I never understood. I mean, I don't eat meat, but I never understood why they'd make burgers that you put the thing that put beetroot juice in it to make it look so it bleeds. I don't understand if you'd turn vegan, why you'd want to eat a burger that looks like it's bleeding.
Well, there are different types of, I'd say, vegan, aren't there? There are people that don't like harming animals, which is fair. Mm. I understand that one. That's fair enough. There are people doing it because it's trendy, and there are other people doing it for health reasons. And if you're doing it because it's trendy, generally, you're eating all the shit stuff because you could eat high-sugar diets, you know, and it's still classed as vegan. You can still eat cakes and all sorts of other stuff and sweets and things because as long as they're not, I haven't got animal products in them. But well, so it's not an healthy diet, that.
As soon as it became trendy, there was a massive, junk food versions of it, basically, is what you saw, like fake bacon and fake everything.
But, I mean, who's controlling all this stuff? We know who's controlling it. I mean, the seed bank in Norway, that massive seed bank that we can't grow the crops anymore because Gates has got all the seeds in a massive vault. And
I've often thought that maybe because there was like a vegan, vegetarian, like a mind shift of consciousness, and they knew that was coming, or they knew it had happened, so they hijacked it.
There's another line, isn't there? Because massive industrial farming of animals is not right.
No.
From the health and welfare of an animal to how it's brought up and how the quality of what it turns into when you eat it. That they're injected with steroids, growth hormones, all sorts of other antibiotics, etc. And we're eating all this stuff. And so that's not healthy either, is it?
We'll be eating bugs soon, so that's all good.
Yeah, yeah. But eating the bugs. Anyway, how did we get onto that subject? We went from eating Walker's crisps aborted fetus cells, cheese and onion flavour, to...
I used to like Walker's cheese and onion flavour till I found that.
Till I mentioned that to you.
Yeah, it's got that in it. So I don't
either. Yeah, well, they put it in skimmed
milk. We do tend to go off at tangents, don't we?
Yeah. They put it in the skimmed milk part to enhance the flavouring. But yeah, raw milk. I mean, if you drink raw milk, if you see the nutrients that's supposed to be in milk, when it's pasteurized, all of them disappear. Baby formula, they've got even less in. So nothing in baby formula. And raw milk, it's got them all in. Mm. There's a reason why milk's bad for us. The reason why milk's bad for us is because it's pasteurized. That's it. But yeah, so sorry, we skipped away from your
book. This is the only show on the net where you can go from Australia to Henry Kissinger to raw milk in one conversation. How did we get here?
I don't know. Maybe Lance could get there as well. He's another one, isn't he? Lance and Andy. Yeah, but yeah. So we've covered Henry Kissinger, we've covered Australia, we've covered Las Vegas. I'm trying to think what else we need to cover there. We'll have a bit of a chuckle on this. We had a few memes brought in from the Rise Above meme memeticians, I think Lance calls them. We got calls. We've got the piss taken out of us saying we had big shill mics. We've still got these big shill mics. But here we have Tony Blair delivering one for £333.33. I think that was done by Johnny Fogg. And Sage Ed did one with Big Mike Obama. There. And then Anti-Covid did one there from Shell Garages. Good to know we've got a team of piss takers behind us as well.
I've had more than that sent to me on Instagram as well.
Have you? Right. Mm.
I've heard rumours that they reckon Michelle Obama might be brought in.
Well, he's a good man for the job.
Yeah. That'd be the ultimate switcheroo, wouldn't it, if they got her in as a president.
I was looking at pictures of Henry Kissinger's wife in the comments today.
Lucky girl.
And all I can say is, rather Henry than me.
Is it a geezer, do you reckon?
It's got to be a dude.
I'm going to have a look at that.
Well, yeah, again, Henry Kissinger is another honorary knighthood. I forgot to mention that earlier. Along with Sir Klaus Schwab, Sir Bill Gates, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they don't mean anything, these honorary knighthoods. That they say they don't mean anything.
It just makes you wonder if these people are even truly human. I mean, I'm not going down the reptilian shapeshifter route here. Yeah. I'm just saying that how is it possible for someone to do the amount of harm that the likes of Gates and Schwab and Kissinger do? How is it possible that you're not troubled by your conscience night and day? How can you sleep at night? How can you do this decade after decade? You're lacking empathy. You're lacking basic compassion and humanity. And so can you be accurately described as human when you carry out these activities? You know, they do seem to be a different breed to us.
Generation after generation as well, Matt. So family after family after family after family. If you look at the Rockefellers or the Rothschilds and all the other families that are involved in all this.
But even on the news, when I saw that Kissinger had croaked, they even said, although they're bigging him up and they're talking about it, but they said he was responsible for thousands dying in Cambodia. So they're saying it, but then they're celebrating him.
But that's okay, because it was wartime, so we can justify that.
I'm looking at Kissinger's missus here. bloody hell, she's a big old bird, isn't she?
Got to be a dude, mate. Got to be a dude.
Massive hands as well.
What I love is when you get the very rare story of somebody from one of these family bloodlines that breaks tradition becomes a whistleblower. So there's this dude, John Todd Collins, that I've spoken of. Have you heard about him?
Yeah, I've heard you speak about him.
I've heard
him. He's the guy from the Collins bloodline families, which is one of these sort of elite bloodlines generations. And he got put to use in the music industry, and for some reason he evidently was troubled by his conscience, and he became a born-again Christian, turned his back on the Satanism and all the stuff that he'd been trained in. He was a trained wizard, sorcerer. and blew the whistle and spilt the beans on what really goes on in the music industry. And there's various stories as to what happened to him. Apparently he was offed, you know, they caught up with him and got rid of him. But every now and again, you hear of somebody from one of these families who just can't do it. And they come over onto the good side, you know, just wish it would happen more often.
Well, going back to all the research, like saying to Orwell and all these people, a lot of these people like Boris Johnson do carry the bloodline, but so do his family. And even though his family, his brothers and sisters, all seem to have successful, there's no sort of dropouts there. Why Boris? There's something else other than him just carrying that bloodline. There must be something deeper. Maybe the type of bloodline it is, as in Rh negative, Rh positive type of bloodline. Or there's something even more from an energetic perspective as well, where these people know each other when they walk into a room for some reason. A bit Chris equates it to Omen, when Damien is followed throughout his life and he doesn't know. He just doesn't know that he's been followed, and that sergeant says to him, "We've been looking after you all your life."
Hmm. Just to go back, what happened to John Todd, Matt?
Well, I've heard various stories about what happened to him. You know, it's not particularly pleasant. Apparently they caught up with him and, you know, he paid the price for having broken ranks. It's difficult to get validation of that. I don't think he's still alive now, because it's 1970s when he spoke about all that stuff. But yeah, I mean, these are true heroes. Mm. Someone that would come out of a family like that, knowing that they face great personal risk to themselves by revealing all this information, but we've learned so much from them. So we definitely owe them a debt, you know. But like I say, it doesn't happen very often. Wouldn't it be great, somebody from the Rothschild family?
Or just a Johnson, one of Johnson brothers or sisters, like I'm saying, that why? I mean, we came to the conclusion that he didn't, I'm saying conclusion. One of our theories was that he didn't know, and his old Stanley threw him under the bus. Maybe sold him to the system for whatever reason.
Well, I've got a couple of videos about Johnson we're actually going to play later on. I'll play this one first. This is Stanley Johnson talking about population. Bear in mind that Stanley Johnson worked directly for John D. Rockefeller III in the late 60s on population control. And he's interviewed here by somebody from the Guardian newspaper. It's only a minute long.
You have to get population under control as well, because if you look at it in sheer economic terms, how can you sustain increases in per capita income at a time when you have rising population without rising economic growth? Whereas if you have a declining population, which is what I would aim for, then of course even a stable economic growth situation will give you increases in per capita income. So that's where I stand on
that. Do you have a sense of what the carrying capacity of Britain is, or of the of the world as a whole? Or?
Well, Britain, I put it at 10 or 15 million. I think that'd be absolutely fine. I mean, that would do us really splendidly. At a limit, 2025, I think it's complete nonsense that we are now confronted with an island, would you believe it, of 70 million people. I wrote a paper, I think it's the only paper the Conservative Party has ever published, and it was published as an old Queen Street paper in June 1972, oddly enough. And it was called Britain Needs a Population Policy.
Hmm.
Nice.
Did you notice it was 33 minutes into the recording when you started that?
Oh, lots
of that.
But there we have the ex-Prime Minister's father, numbers of years ago, and he's talked about this for a long time, reducing the population. He's written books about it called Population Control and things like this, about reducing population, and his son just happens to be in power when they're spearing everybody with something that's increased the average death rate.
And he's got about 7 kids.
Mm. Yeah, he's got 7 kids. So is Boris.
That helps.
Yeah, that helps, yeah. So is Boris. Again, like that MP was talking about euthanasia but didn't want to take it himself.
Mm. Yeah. They should lead by example.
Yeah.
I want Bill Gates to show us how we reduce the population. You first, mate.
Yeah, well, I think that TED Talk, he actually told us how they were going to do it, and then 5-6 years later, he's doing it. Hmm. We'll reduce population by injecting everybody, that's what he said.
Well, Kissinger made a comment about that as well. There's a famous quote that's been circulating from years ago, and it's a genuine one. You know, he said it in an interview. He was talking about how Britneys, you know, can be used to reduce the population. And he was talking about the sheep mentality of the herd. They'll all do what they're told because they're just dumb, stupid animals. Words to that effect. You know, you can find the quote. It's right there. He said it.
I had a little glimmer of hope at work the other day. I'm working in the kitchen, and there's a young lad, he's only 18. And we got talking, and I was telling him, he said, "What do you do on your podcast?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I have a listen." And I gave him, you know, where to find it or whatever. And I said, "But just to be warned, there's quite a lot of stuff, you know, a bit anti-jib-jab and a bit this. I don't want to offend you or anything like that." And he went, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, just for instance, right, did you have the arm spear?" And he went, "Did I F?" And I went, "Really?" I was actually shocked. And I said, "Really?" And he went on to tell me that not only had he not had it, his mum and dad had it, his brother had it, and all his friends had it. And I said, "Well, why didn't you get it?" And he's like, he said, "Well, everyone was saying I won't be able to go abroad." I said, "Well, F you, I'm not going to go abroad then. Sod it. I don't care. I'm not having it." And he just, for some reason, it really shocked me. I told Don about it when I got home. Because this one kid, 18-year-old, just solid no. And he said his dad's still trying to talk him into getting it.
And he said, "No." It's good, I've just got back from Australia and America with zero arm spears. So all those people that took it in 2021 thinking, "Oh God, might not be able to go on holiday again if I don't." Well, I've just done that without having taken any of them. How must they feel about that?
Yeah.
Now they've potentially put their life at risk just for the sake of 2 weeks in Benidorm on Ryanair.
Yeah.
The difference was, Matt,
and they didn't even need to do it because they lifted it all, you know, anyway.
I mean, but for someone like you or us, I was prepared never to go away again.
That's I was.
It's fine, wherever.
Well, yeah, I thought I'd never would.
No, I didn't either. No. But never mind. The Divock Inquiry is going to sort it all out. They've had all these politicians there, Wancock, Whitty's been there. They're going to resolve it all for us. They're going to find out what went wrong.
Yeah. Well, all these cases are going so well, aren't they?
Yeah.
You know, Michael Urbanisia is going to sort it out. Rainer Fulmich is going to sort it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Looking good.
Yeah. And meanwhile, all these people that were in these, that were running this shit show, they've all seem to have got new medals and jobs and upgrades, more money. Boris Johnson's got £1 million a year deal with Daily Mail. Van Tampon, he's got a new job with Moderna.
Did you see Chris Not So Witty come out recently saying that Rishi Sunak's Eat Out to Help Out scheme would have resulted in many, many deaths from COVID? That's what he said. So we get this scheme where we're supposed to go out to restaurants and support these businesses because they've all been shut down for months. And now we're told that doing so, on the government's advice, caused untold numbers of deaths. It's a piss take.
Yeah, it's just a piss take.
I was working in a place in Cambridge in a pub, freelancing, and that period of time, it was full on clown world because you had to wear a mask to go to the bar. You had to sit, and people were coming as well, coming to the pub and just sitting there eating. Then when they stood up, they had to put a mask on.
They were allowed to but there's a COVID layer, Chris. If you stand up, you hit the COVID
layer. And I was working in the kitchen, and if I needed a slash, right, I was supposed to put my mask on and go to the toilet, even though I've just cooked all these fucking dildos as dinner. And what the jump out my way as I walked past as well, and dressed as a chef. So I'd wait till there were no one in the toilet and I'd bolt out to go to the toilet because I just refused to put a mask on. But they'd jump out of my way. And I'm thinking, I've just been cooking your dinner. I washed my
hands. It was an IQ test, and the vast bulk of the population failed.
A sheep IQ test.
I think one of my favourites was, so the delivery arrives in the morning and I'm looking at it sat in the car park because we've got to leave it outside for an hour.
Why? Because there's all them things. Green steam coming off it. Yeah. The Wuhan steam.
Yeah.
Were there any bats there, Chris?
No, green steam with like skulls in it.
Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, Professor Mickey, she's got a new job with the World Health Organization advisory group, terrorizing the world now, not just the UK.
Tony Basil made a tune about her, didn't she?
Yeah, Metal Mickey. Yeah. These people, going back to what you were saying though, again, as you know, me and Chris have done podcasts on these people. Every single one of these people is from, going back to the pop stars and the actors and things like that, from influential bloodlines. Even people like Van Tampon, whose grandfather, if I remember rightly, was the Prime Minister of Vietnam or Thailand, one of the two. And I think he sold his country down the river. Mickey's family, she, from both sides of her family, her ex-husband has got royal genealogy, so her kids have all got royal genealogy. And her mother was Dame Mickey as well. And her father worked, her father and mother worked on the Enigma machine, so they were intelligence operatives. Whitty's father was an intelligence operative that got shot by accident, apparently, in Greece, because a Muslim terrorist thought it was an MI6 agent.
Not that he was an MI6 agent.
Not that he was. The story goes that he'd bought the escort off an MI6 agent and he'd got him mixed up.
Was it a Ford Escort?
Ford Escort car, yeah. Yeah, so it's not...
Well, it's like we say in our emails, Dom, no one's dad is a plumber.
No one's dad's a plumber. No.
And no plumbers, no builders, no lorry drivers, no dockers, but plenty of diplomats, politicians, university lecturers, MI5 agents, spies.
Yeah.
Plenty of them.
And you generally see that, don't you? Even that these people are interwoven. I mean, we've got Dave McGowan to thank for starting to look for these type of backgrounds, but every single one of them's got a background like that. It's so bleeding obvious.
That's right.
No, it's obvious to say, but it's almost, it is literally like there's a two-tier system where we're in one tier and they just run this other system and on their own.
We often talk about this, Chris, and I don't know what you think about it, Mark, but it's got very little to do with, I'll say money, but the class system to me is another diversion. And I'm not saying there isn't lower class and upper class and all that type of thing, but it's another argument, isn't it, where the elite people don't necessarily need money. When I call them elite, the Rothschilds don't need money. They don't go to fill the car up at Shell, and they're not like us. They don't live the same way as we do. Yeah. And these people seem to have a free. If you look at Trudeau, he knows he's untouchable.
Yeah,
No one likes his dad. How could you live your life like Gates or Blair, knowing no one likes you, or very few people like you, and still go to sleep at night?
Yeah.
Imagine being his children.
Jimmy Savile used to say, "Don't forget who I am," whenever he was in a tight spot, implying that he knew he was protected. Nothing was ever going to happen to him while he was alive.
Yeah.
And Bob Geldof, who I've talked about in many of my presentations and books, said something similar to Paula Yates when Michael Hutchence of INXS turned up dead on the 22nd of November, of all dates, in 1997, in a Sydney hotel room. We're told that he committed suicide, but all the evidence suggests that he was taken out. And this was when Hutchence had just taken up in a relationship with Paula Yates, who'd previously been with Bob Geldof. And Paula Yates spoke to the media after Michael Hutchence died and said some very uncomplimentary things about Bob Geldof. And she said that at one point he had said to her in a conversation, "Don't forget who I am," or words to that effect. So these people know that they've got protection from on high. I'm not talking about God, the Most High. I'm talking about the pyramid of power, the control system has got their backs. As long as they continue to do what's required of them and push the agendas and don't stray from the path, they will be protected. But the minute you do try and stray from the path, they'll have you.
Yeah.
I never liked Bob Geldof. I always thought he was a creeper.
Well, I mean, Bob Geldof there, he's now a shareholder in this company called 8 Miles. That's a venture capital company or an investment company into Africa. He's a co-founder with a load of hedge fund guys. In 2012 alone, they had $200 million put into it. That's who these people are. They've never sold Africa, yet now he's pushing for, you can see who's in that, JP Morgan's there, Standard Chartered, HSBC, except Ernst Young.
He said something like Africa's open for business or something.
Africa's open for business.
Just to retract quickly, 1 second. I were on about this. I don't know if we were on about it, Dom, we're on about it to be missus, but Hutchinson, who hung himself from a doorknob in a bathroom in a hotel, which happens quite a lot.
With a broken hand.
Did he have a broken hand?
Yeah.
Oh, when they found him, he had a broken hand.
Well, he broke his hand before he hung himself, you know, like you do.
You can only do it if you break your hand.
That's right.
But one thing I noticed about these situations, like it happened to Robin Williams, it happened to Michael Hutchinson, it happened to Anthony Bourdain, the chef, the same situation. How many people do you know have hung themselves?
Mick Jagger's girlfriend, Lorraine Scott.
Mm. Who was that? Sorry, Matt.
Mick Jagger's girlfriend was found strangled with a red scarf. There was a whole spate of them at that time. Mm. It was people from the fashion design world.
Yeah.
So it's Bourdain and
McQueen. Alistair McQueen. Yeah. Is it?
How many people have you known?
Yeah.
So they're all found with these red scarves around their necks. So it's obviously ritualistic in nature. But that was a very strange period because there was a whole spate of them at that time.
I mean, Anthony Bourdain's weren't even that long ago. But when you think of what level of legend Robin Williams was even when he was alive, and Anthony Bourdain in his own right as well, and all these other people. But what I've realised is once they've done that, they're forgotten about. They're not even brought up as a history. I mean, Michael Hutchinson was a very talented guy. He's not even brought up. I'm sure they still play his music here and there, but he's not discussed, is he? Like some of the other legends that died.
What amazes me is they can get rid of these rock stars and the public chalk it up as some sort of overdose. You're never really given an official cause of death. There's always ambiguity about it. But, you know, Dolores O'Riordan of the Cranberries turns up dead in a bathtub and the public are just like, oh, well, you know, there goes another rock star. They do drugs, don't they? They do overdose on stuff and they just get away with it. You know, if millions of plumbers were turning up dead in bathtubs, people would say, why are all these plumbers dying?
And it would be more explainable if they were a plumber, to be fair. They might be mending bath.
Well, they got into trouble with a leak. But they do get away with it with these rock stars. I mean, Matthew Perry the other week turns up dead in a jacuzzi. Mm. And most people are just like, oh, yeah, that's a shame, isn't it? They're not like, well, that's a bit weird. Why did that happen? And why were there smiley yellow faces everywhere?
But they're always fed with the story up to that point.
Drug problem.
Yeah, exactly. They're always fed for years before that they've got a drug problem, drink problem. So when it happens, nobody's shocked that it's happened. But when you catalogue all these people and events, there's literally probably hundreds of them, if you really wanted to look deeply into it, of these famous stars that have died that way. Mm. I'll tell you whose brother died that way. MP, Savage Jabed, his brother died that way.
There was a guy, I remember a Tory MP, and it was a big spate of in 1980s, I think, weren't there, of them getting found with bloody apples in the mouth and been stockings on and stuff. It almost became a
sure that's not a dream you've had.
Came a bit of a joke, didn't it? But also, is it a humiliation thing? Because they always imply that they were doing something dodgy as well, don't they?
There was that guy, Stephen Milligan. Do you remember him?
Mm. Yeah.
So he was found with a plastic bag over his head, that's apparently. The one. We were told that he was into this bizarre asphyxiation game where you bring yourself almost to the point of sexual orgasm, and then you rip the bag off at the last minute. And we're told that sometimes they don't have time to rip the bag off.
Especially with a broken hand.
With a broken hand, and they suffocate. But I read something a few years ago suggesting that Stephen Milligan was on the verge of revealing paedophile rings within the government, within Parliament. And he gathered all this information together. Next thing you know, he's taking part in this bizarre sexual fetish thing where he just happens to suffocate himself to death, you know.
And I mean, when you think about it now as well, how did it get in all the newspapers? It was big news, that. I mean,
it was.
Wouldn't there have been a point of, you know, just keep that bit quiet and we can
see. It's an advert, isn't it?
Suicide. Of course.
Warning people.
Yeah.
And it's humiliation as well. Humiliation, it's just tarnishing their name so that most people remember them as these sick perverts instead of what they really were.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, Robin Williams as well. He was a comedy genius, and he died, and then you just there's nothing. He's obviously still in films, remember? No one ever discusses him like he was anything, you know. Not like they talk about fucking Rolling Stones or whoever, you know. He gets no accolades anymore.
It's interesting how there's grades to how celebrity deaths are reported as well, isn't it? Like you get somebody like Dom. You had that story earlier of the guy from Killing Joke. Was it the guitarist or the bassist from
Killing Joke?
So that will get a very brief mention in the media. You might find it buried away in a newspaper somewhere, but then it will be quickly forgotten. Can you imagine when Paul McCartney, or whoever it is, Billy Shears, when he shuffles off this mortal coil, that's going to be in the news for days and days and days, or weeks and weeks. Every newspaper, every website is going to be talking about it because it suggests that his life was worth more than the guy from Killing Joke.
Yeah.
So you see what I mean? There's levels to it. The more fame and success and prominence you've had, the more your life gets celebrated when you shuffle off, as if one human life is worth more than another.
Yeah, exactly.
The way they play it.
Yeah, I mean, McCartney's clearly got some clout on it because he's everywhere, or wherever he is.
Well, bloody hell, we're in for a treat in the coming years because Sir Cliff Richard is 80-odd, so, you know, he's coming to the end of his runway. Same thing with Sir Paul McCartney. Is there a trend emerging here, or is it just...
Sir Rod Stewart.
Yep, Sir Elton John. So in the coming years, when all this lot go, I think there's going to be quite a few startling revelations that come forward because I don't know if you've noticed, but quite often these things don't come out until after the individual has passed away. We didn't discover the truth of Savile until he'd gone. So yeah, when Cliff Richard goes, I think there could be quite a few juicy stories which emerge in its wake.
But I think we've discussed this before, but in their upside down world, when it got revealed about Savile to us, it's like, oh, shock horror. It's disgusting. In their world, is it a celebration of his evilness? Or, you know, in the upside down world we're in?
It make me wonder why they allowed it to come out, because they could have kept it covered up.
Yeah,
I mean, to this day, if they'd not put all that stuff in the mainstream media, to this day, people would still be saying Jimmy Savile was a great man, did a lot of good work for charity, he was a national treasure. But for some reason, they allowed the truth about him to come out.
Maybe it was just fantastic journalism.
maybe that was his ultimate last wish. When I'm gone, I want you to celebrate how evil I was, or, you know, I don't know. Who knows? These lunatics.
Can't put anything past him, can you?
No. Weirdly enough, I lived in Leeds when he died, and they kept him in that hotel near the train station.
Yeah, what is it? Queen's Hotel.
Queen's Hotel, that's it. And I was living about 100 metres away from it in a flat in Leeds, me and my missus. And I did ponder, thought, shall I go around and have a look just out of interest?
That would be nice. It didn't look right well when they were alive.
No. I think my missus said I'd already said he was a pedo. I think David Icke said he was a pedo, didn't he, before? Back in the 90s, I think.
Well, I mean, it must be quite a coincidence that one of the Peter Sutcliffe's victims were found near his house, Andy Newey and Brady, and Moira Hindler. I mean, how many people could have rubbed shoulders with those three by accident?
Well, reportedly, that famous look of Savile's with the peroxide blonde dyed hair, that was an homage to Moira Hindley and how she looked.
Right.
Because prior to the Moore's murders story breaking, Savile had dark hair. And then from that point on, you always saw him with dyed blonde hair. And he actually looked a bit like Moira Hindley.
He did.
He had like that witchy hook nose look, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, I might go for that peroxide look.
Could be a problem there.
Yeah, it might be a problem there, yeah. Might get my eyelashes done.
Did you read, what is it, Mark? Programme to Kill, the other Dave McGowan book.
Yeah, I've read that, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was good as well. I mean, because I remember talking about what Dom just said, I remember thinking... So clearly all these American serial killers are all, you know, whatever they are, Operation Phoenix or whatever. Not in England, though. As a proper, you know, grassroots serial killers. We don't have any of that nonsense going on. And like, it only takes a while to realise that they had someone in for Yorkshire Ripper. They had Savile in for being the Yorkshire Ripper because he found a body near his house. And also, I remember talking to someone in Leeds. You know, they locked Leeds down. You couldn't actually go out. They had curfews. When Yorkshire Ripper were on the prowl.
Yeah.
And I remember it. Don't you, Dom? I remember Yorkshire Ripper. You know, everyone was terrified.
Did you ever see the Channel 4 series Red Riding?
I've actually read the books of that, Mark.
Yeah, me too.
David Pierce, is it? I think
David Peace. Yeah.
David Peace has it.
Very dark books. Not happy reads. But I loved those TV adaptations. And there's one episode, the second episode, is all about the Yorkshire Ripper. Mm-hmm. And they catch him, and they've got this guy that looks just like him in custody. And it just depicts the West Yorkshire police as utterly corrupt and just up to their necks in just filth and just depraved activity, and a very dark period in time.
I'd like to read them with fresh eyes, because I read them 20 years ago, and I didn't really have as much of a conspiratorial mind then. But why? Where did he get them stories from? I mean, and that Red Riding, I mean, it's literally talking about high-level paedophile ring, isn't it?
The abduction of children, keeping them in, well, in the TV series, they're being kept in underground mines, disused old mines in Yorkshire. Yeah. And the pedos are going down there and abusing these kids. And there's high-level cover-ups by the police. The main guy behind it, loads of spoiler alerts here for anyone that's going to watch it. But the main guy behind it is a priest, you know, that's his cover. And I think there was a lot of truth in that.
I don't think they've ever been shown again, you know, Mark, those on TV.
Yeah, well, I've got the DVD box set.
I think I'm going to get the DVD. Great.
Very hard watch, then. Very hard watch.
Not a happy watch, yeah, for sure.
No. Well made, though. Well done.
The guy who's in it, it's Andrew Garfield, isn't it?
David Morrissey's in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that other guy, I've forgotten his name.
Paddy Considine. Anyway.
Paddy Considine, that's what I wanted to say. Yeah, Paddy Considine's one of them. Yeah, Red Riding. Yeah, worth a watch. I'll have to get hold of that again. I'll be